What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, finance and business, and mental health. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. And before we introduce today's guest, my brother Eric from Huntsville, aka Hunts Vegas, living in Nashville, brother. Who do you have for our Black Men Sunday spotlight this week?
Hey, appreciate that intro, Corey. Hey, my spotlight today, we're going to surface in and focus on a guy. His name is Matthew Cherry. Now, the interesting thing about Matthew, you know what? He's the inventor of the tricycle. And he was born on February the 5th, 1834 in Washington, D.C. Now, the thing about Matthew, while not much is known about his early life, it is evident that he's had a passion for revolutionizing transportation. So he's also known for his improvement of the velocipedes. I don't know if I pronounced that right, velocipede. But anyway, following this, the invention of both the tricycle and the streetcar fender. Now, Cherry professed his invention with a great improvement of the tricycle, which is a precursor to the modern bicycle. Now, the vehicle consisted of a metal seat frame with wheels attached to it. And then he just took it and before the pedals existed and put on it, he added those to it. And it was quite a fast way to travel around town. So Cherry's model of the tricycle was an improvement on vast versions. And eventually his model evolved into what we use as a modern tricycle as we use today. And again, that's my spotlight for today, Mr. Matthew Cherry. And back to you. Oh, and one more thing I want to give another shout out to. And this is another unknown fact that I want people to know about. Was this female. Her name is Jay Jackson. And she's a student of Indianapolis, Indiana. And she now has her MBA and a candidate of Jarvis Christian University, which is the same school her grandfather founded back in 1890. So I'm giving a shout out to her. She's first, like you say, that we talk about generational wealth. Her granddaddy founded the school and she got her MBA from. And that's what's up.
Yeah, man. I ain't gonna lie. I thought you was gonna say they had some type of Alabama influence going on. I was waiting on that Alabama influence.
Yeah. You know, I do sometimes. So, you know, not today.
So let's get into it, man. We have Andrew McCaskill back on Black Men Sundays. And it's kind of like, I feel like this is kind of like Karate Kid Part 1 going into Karate Kid Part 2, where you know, when you put the Part 2 back on, they give you a little taste of the last little 5 minutes of the Part 2, then they get right into it. So that's what we about to do, man. But let me introduce you for the brothers that wasn't with us back then, because it's a lot of new brothers, man. This brother's a cultural analyst, marketing executive, LinkedIn career expert. That means on the 1st and 15th, his check says LinkedIn on him, like, for real, for real. This brother's from Mississippi. You still in Harlem, bro? You don't move.
Hey, man, I went from Harlem to Atlanta. I'm in Atlanta now. And, you know, there's two different worlds, but it's one thing that's the same about both places, brother.
Yeah.
I think you know what that is.
Oh, you already know. But hold up, I ain't even done introducing you yet. Just for y'all don't know, this brother has degrees from Morehouse College, Guizveta Business School. You know, I'm trying to get my Spanish right going. And you know what I'm saying? And this brother gave us a lot of, when we talk about info sharing, when we talk about, we ain't trying to tap dance, we tapping in. That's what this brother is, man. And you know what? After listening to that brother show a couple of times, I realized Black Men Sundays is my superpower, my brother.
Yes, sir.
Let's get right into it. You know, I dropped that fish grease like I did last time. I threw you a layup, but I really dropped you in. You know what I'm saying? So how you doing first, man?
First of all, man, I'm doing great. Let me tell you one thing I can say is that I love Black Men Sundays podcast, not just when I'm on here, but I'm listening to y'all all the rest of the time too, watching it and listening to it. And I'm always learning something, man. And I tell you, man, I appreciate what you're doing because I feel like we get left out of the conversation so often, man. That's the thing that I feel like we just get left out of the conversation. And listen, I celebrate all the conversations that are happening with everybody else too, but I feel like that when we get a chance to have a conversation that is geared towards us, focused on us, it's a beautiful thing.
But let's jump right in, man. It's 2025. Yeah, yeah. So the last time I spoke to you at the end of the show, You mentioned AI. I'm quote you by saying someone who understands AI could end up being your boss. So let's talk about that a little bit. Like, where are we right now with AI? Like, is that something that we still need to tap into? Because on the back end of Black Men Sundays, you dropped a gem that I think a lot of people didn't quite get. You said on LinkedIn, y'all actually have AI courses. Let's start right there, man.
Yeah, man. So listen, the last time I was here, I said that everybody was having these conversations talking about AI might take your job, AI might take your job. But the reality is that at the time I was saying to people like, look, AI might not take your job today, but somebody who understands AI will definitely be in a position to take your job or be your boss. And I think that we're graduating even beyond that at this point now, right? We just did our top skills on the rise. And this isn't what somebody's predicting or what somebody thinks. These are the skills that people are actually hiring for today. The skills that they are listing on job descriptions that are must-have, non-negotiables. And AI literacy is at the top of that list. So now this isn't even about getting ahead. This is about staying in the game. So I really say that, like, AI literacy and being able to have a conversation about artificial intelligence, being able to use some of these tools, having already played with them, is the game changer. It's actually going to be a non-negotiable for a lot of people who are hiring right now. And we already know that even with all of the crazy things that are going on in the economy and all that kind of stuff, about half of Americans are looking for jobs now. That's not to say they're unemployed. That's that they're actually looking around to say, oh, should I jump? Even as crazy as the economy is, should I be looking? And I'm going to tell you right now, if you're looking for a job and you cannot talk about how you have used artificial intelligence, Copilot, ChatGPT, Claude, some of these tools, if you can't talk about how you've either used them at work or used them in your personal life, that interview is going to fall flat because their hiring managers are literally asking people, have you used AI? Which AI tools have you played with? And we got to have a good answer for
Since you coming out the gate like that, let's talk about
that.
the LinkedIn skills on the rise list. You said AI. What else is on the list right now?
Actually, we talked a lot about AI as number one, but let me say what I think is even more surprising for a lot of people is that the future of work, brother, is still human. It's human skills that are number two, number three, number four, number five, number six on that list. The number two most in-demand skill that people are hiring for today is conflict mitigation. And I know that that sounds wild, but that's the world that we're living in right now. We are a very divided nation. We're a very divided world. And if you think that just because those divisions are going to go away just because you come into a building and swipe your badge, you are wrong. People are more audacious. They got more audacity and a lot more anger than they've had ever before. And some of those things spill into work. And so the number two most in-demand skill is conflict mitigation. People want to know that you can hear two sides of a story and get to consensus. They want to know that with all of these workplace tensions that are happening, you got five generations in the workforce today that all think about professionalism differently. They all think about how to solve problems differently. They're looking for people who will come in, can listen to all of the points, and help people get to an agreement and to move faster from argument and finally get to agreement. So that conflict mitigation, that's a human skill. Bro, they're also looking at adaptability. The workplace is evolving and changing so fast. They want people who will pivot and not panic whenever something changes. We're looking at people that have been making 5 and 10 year plans, and now we planning for 5 months instead of 5 years. And people want people that can pivot. They can change on a dime. AI is changing all of this stuff so fast, man, that people are like, oh, now I don't need a whole person to do all this analysis. I can do it without a person. I don't want to fire that person, but I'm gonna need that person and me to be able to work together and figure out what they gonna do next. That's adaptability, innovative thinking. That's on that. Process optimization. Those are all human skills. Communication and storytelling, those are human skills that we are saying that, like, hey, if I want to get this done, I got to have somebody help me build a case. I need a good communicator, somebody that can tell a good story, somebody that the person on the other side of the room says, you might not sound like me, you might not look like me, but the words that you're saying sounded real good to me, right? You made a great argument about that. You bringing me along for it. That's a great storyteller. AI is important, man. It's really important. But our human skills, that's the future. The future of work is still human. Gotcha. And that's good news for Black folks, Black men, people from underrepresented groups across the board.
No, that's great information, man. You're taking the questions, man. I literally had that written down. It's the future of work, human still. So you'd already answered that. So I'm going to jump to the next question. So the last time we had you on, but before I go there, let's go back to the LinkedIn AI courses. How can people find those on LinkedIn? And do you have to be premium to access that?
So you don't have to be premium to access the LinkedIn learning courses. If you go to opportunity.linkedin.com, you can access LinkedIn learning courses that are directly correlated with every one of the most in-demand skills. So what we did was like we said, okay, we can't just tell people that these are the skills that are in demand. What we need to also do is to say, hey, here's how you can get these skills if you don't have them. So we've made at opportunity.linkedin.com, you can go to our skills on the rise list and you can look at those. You can look at each one of the skills. For almost every single one of those skills, there's LinkedIn learning courses that are free that you can take to at least get you started on the learning journey or help you better understand how to attain those skills or to even ask for opportunities at work to help you get them on the job.
Got you. Yeah, man, that's what I'm talking about. And the last time we spoke to you, it was 2024, March. It was a week before my birthday.
Right before my birthday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But in 2024, you said there's two applicants for every job on LinkedIn. But then you said on 2023, there were two job openings for every applicant. So it's 2025 now. Where we at with that?
Man, the job market is competitive. It's Sunday. I'm not going to curse, but let me just tell you, it's competitive as all get out. We're looking at probably now 2.5 applicants for every single job. It's really competitive. And some of those, and those numbers are recent, but those numbers don't even completely take into consideration and account all of the government workers nationally who are now all of a sudden in the job market unexpectedly, right? So you got to think about this. Everybody sort of thinks about, oh, federal workers is Washington, D.C. You got federal workers all over this country. We got the CDC in Atlanta, IRS in Georgia and in Florida. You got federal agencies with offices all over this country, man, not just in DC. So the job market now is as competitive as it has been in my adulthood. And I'm almost 50. It's a competitive market out there. Now, that's not to say that people are not getting hired. A lot of people are finding opportunities in their companies that they already work for. Most people don't work for a large corporation. A lot of people work for small businesses, right? And so people are sometimes saying, well, look, I might not like the job I have, but let me try to figure out what my opportunity is to do something different inside of this organization where I already am. Some people got to grow where they're planted, right? There's other folks who are going to say, well, look, this is not the right, this is not the right job or the right environment for me. I'm going to get out altogether. So I'm looking for work. And then you got a whole bunch of people who are federal employees that have had all of the choice taken away from them, right? So you are now competing with a lot more people for roles and opportunities than you would have been if we were talking to each other in March of 2024.
2.5 applicants for every job in 2025. Let me ask you this too, man. In last year, when I asked you, the stats were over 40% of Black professionals felt underpaid and 90% or thinking about changing jobs in 24. Do we have any updated numbers for 25 with those?
Yeah, numbers? So I don't have updated numbers for people feeling underpaid, but I do have updated numbers for Black folks who are actively looking. And that number right now is about 65% of African Americans are thinking about what their next move, what their next professional move is. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're at the interviewing point, but they are at the point where they are thinking about making that move or preparing to make that move. They're looking. Some people are looking casually. Some people are looking hardcore, like out there beating the streets with their resumes, applying every day. But we have that. It's in the 60 percentile, man. Even with what's going on in the world, what's going on in the economy, we're looking. Not the way we were last year, because I feel like they, of course, some people are saying, yo, I'm a hunker down where I am right now. I might not need to move, or not the way people were thinking, the optimism that we had a year ago. It's different. It's just different. And people thinking about their ability to move on to their next play. But still, people are still very actively looking for work, man.
Gotcha. And for the brothers out here that are entrepreneurs, that are like, okay, I'm making enough money now where I want to hire some employees. Because a lot of times when we talk about LinkedIn, it's always that person looking. But, you know, on the flip side, the entrepreneur or the business is looking to hire people. Do you have any tips and tricks for those brothers and sisters this year? And do they need to be premium? Because I get that all the time. Do I need to be premium? Yeah. So let's go. Yeah. Because, you know, I always tell them, you know, I know Drew. So let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Listen, you do not have to be premium. But listen, premium has a ton of benefits, or you wouldn't be, or they wouldn't be charging so much for it, right? But I will say that looking for finding and sourcing talent as an entrepreneur on LinkedIn, one of the best things you can do is just putting on the link around your LinkedIn profile that you're hiring, and posting on LinkedIn and to your network that you're hiring and what you're hiring for. Listen, your network on LinkedIn is incredible. And there are a couple of folks who I see thriving on LinkedIn, groups of people. Black women, particularly Black women entrepreneurs, are power master users of LinkedIn. And I want to see the brothers be able to do that exact same thing. Black women have entrepreneurship groups on the platform. They share information about what's working, what's not working for them on the platform. They also connect each other to opportunities. They might not post it on their wall, but they're DMing each other and sharing stuff. And when they hear about something, they will share their job postings for each other on their wall. If Justine has got a job opening, she's going to send that job opening to her soror, and her soror is going to post it on her platform too. So now she got twice as many, three times as many people looking at that job opening. And not to mention, she's got more people looking at that job opening. She's building up a pipeline of, even if I fill this role, this other person that saw this role or saw this opportunity or applied to it, today's employee might be tomorrow's collaborator. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Sisters are doing a really good job on LinkedIn of building community, man, and information sharing. Let me tell you another thing that is wild that I see sisters doing that I have these conversations, is that they're taking some of the mystery and the, I call it, ego and shame out of talking about money. They're on here sharing offer letters with each other. Again, not on their walls, but they're saying, okay, I got a community of other folks. You know, we oftentimes, my people perish for lack of information. I'm a Sunday school boy. And one of the things that I think that we miss out on sometimes is that information sharing. And I think the sisters are doing this, and they're using LinkedIn as a place to engage and meet and make connections. And then having these deeper conversations offline from people that they're meeting on the platform, talking about income inequality, how to get past it, how to negotiate for better money, not just as an employee, but also how to negotiate contracts better with companies and corporations as entrepreneurs. I hear Black women having these conversations, and I see them having these conversations on platform. They're meeting people and creating community in a way. And I think that what they've mastered, bruh, is this thinking about networking differently. So I've always said that your network is not about who has your business card or who has your telephone number or whose email address you have. Your network is about a community of people who are rooting for you to win. They ain't got to be your best friend. They ain't got to hang out at your house. But if it was heads or tails, I would vote for yes for this person to win or no for them not to. They gonna say yes. That's all you need. And I think the sisters have figured out that formula on the platform. And I want brothers to be starting to think about that as well, building that community as well. Even if you don't have to have premium to do it either. It's about building that network. It's about building your brand on a platform that's built on professionalism and business.
Yeah, that's great information, man. I was going to say, man, you do have some superpowers, because the last time you came on the show, I told you I was having trouble getting my check. I'm like, come on, I'm verified, but it wouldn't go through. 2 weeks after you on the show, I'm like, oh, the check just shows up mysteriously. So my man,
you got Drew, that verification.
Hey, man, I'm trying to tell you. I was like, oh, Drew came through. So whenever I talk to people, I'm like, remember, I know Drew. So holler at me, man. I know that guy in marketing. You know what I'm saying? I actually know him. Like, he's cool. So anyway, man, and you know, I love that information you share, because I remember on the last show you were talking about the information sharing on LinkedIn, where I think you used the example where you went for a job interview and the job, you thought you were getting a raise, but then when you went in there, you realized that you were getting like bottom of the barrel. And then when you went in the info sharing, someone actually showed you what they offer was 3 years prior to you going there. And so you were able to, you know, get that range with that. Cause that, you know, so I definitely enjoyed that.
And I do the exact same thing for people now to this day, man. Like I believe in that sharing information so that we all, that our tides should raise each other's boats, man.
Word. But hey, man, you know, this LinkedIn, we representing today. So, you know, last time you came on the show, you gave us some networking tips. But give us some secrets or some networking tips for entrepreneurs looking to hire. Because I feel like the last time we were people looking for jobs. Now for the people that are hiring, are there any extra attractive tips and tricks that they're not using to really, you know, take advantage of LinkedIn, period?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing is, I think that you should not only post on LinkedIn when you need something from the community that's there. I think you should start to, if you want to attract people to come and work for your organization, you got to start putting information out there, positive information about your organization, right? Like if you've got a business, like you need to be sharing your successes. Success wants to get with success, right? And so excellence wants to get with excellence. You need to promote your business on LinkedIn as a platform, because you never know who you're going to attract. You may attract additional partners. You may attract a different talent in terms of people who want to come work for you, but you also may attract different customers and collaborators, right? So I think that that's number one. Number two is definitely turn on the We Are Hiring. You can turn it on really easily on your LinkedIn. It's pretty easy to do that. I think that that's a great way to let people know that you're actually hiring. Most people who are using LinkedIn premium products, of course, you can do that, do a multitude of other things to hit the algorithm. But I also think that one of the things that if you are an entrepreneur and you're hiring for talent, you just need to post about it and post the why. It's not just listing a job. You can list the job description for sure, man. But I think also for small businesses, you got to list what you're joining, that you got to have, like, particularly if you want younger employees too. A lot of younger employees, yeah, they want that check, but they also want to know what kind of company they're joining, right? Like they need to know the why, what you offer more than just that paycheck. I would also say that one of the things that is really, really helpful if you're sourcing talent or you want visibility in general, is to be creative with it, right? Like, don't just list the job description, oh, I'm hiring. Maybe you want to list the job description and some, you know, images of what work life is like at your company, right? Or a link back to the website. We're seeing other folks that we're seeing recruiters now for very specific, like high demand roles, like engineers, who are not as many open roles for engineers as there are engineers looking for work. They're doing video on the platform. Anytime there's an image or video, it's just going to hit the algorithm differently.
Black Men Sundays, fellas, we talking to Drew. Say your name and the state and your city and get a couple questions off. Let's go.
Well, this is Kalali out of Calvert County, Maryland. Yeah. Again, I could do some more AI stuff. I don't know how much time we got, but every time you come on, it's like you always take us in new directions. And so I just love that. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes I come on Black Men Sunday. I use it for my own benefit. So this is gonna be one of them days. I use it for my own benefit. So like you talked about conflict mitigation being one of the biggest things that skill sets that people are looking for. I happen to do a little conflict mitigation at my job, in terms of being a facilitator. So I facilitate meetings for leaders. I facilitate, meetings for different groups. And sometimes I also do some conflict resolution if there are some issues between, organizations, in particular, different components of an organization. Is that something that you think would I would have a high potential, like spinning off as like a business or like just making myself self-employed for a little bit of extra money?
Oh man, yeah. I think that you could absolutely position yourself as a consultant to organizations doing conflict mitigation. I think probably what would be most lucrative is actually facilitating learning sessions and skills building sessions to where you say, "Hey, I know that conflict mitigation is a sorely missed skill set." And it's oftentimes one of the biggest leadership gaps that we see right now. And so you may say, I don't want to change my leadership. I just want my leadership to change. I want my leaders to get better. I want them to be better at dealing with the moment that we're living in right now. And so what I would say is that one of the things that you might be able to do is to say, I will come in and facilitate conflict mitigation workshops for you and your leadership teams. But here's where I think you can make the most money. Yeah, you could get it for the leadership team because people are going to always do that. But go in and pitch to, I'm going to do conflict mitigation sessions every month for 6 months with your middle managers, because the middle managers are the people who are rubber meeting the road all the time. Most of the conflicts that happen at the most senior levels, it's usually whoever the senior most person says. If the senior most person says, we going left, everybody, no matter how far right you leaning, we all going left. It's in the middle manager category where people are getting the most pushback, or people are saying, well, look, do we trust him to tell us what to do? You know what I mean? So I would say, one, yeah, you could go in and consult on an issue one time, or you could go in as a consultant and teach for 6 months, 9 months. You could go in for one big session with one leadership team, or you could go in for every month for 6 or 7 months for all of the 100 middle managers that you got in there, and rinse and repeat the same learning session over and over. That's just the business consultant, business development consultant in me. That's the sales guy in me that says that. But absolutely, man, I think there's opportunity.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm gonna definitely take that into consideration. I know we've been talking about AI a lot lately, and I think when I was on here last, a comment that I made was that I listened to a lot of podcasts. I was listening to a different podcast, and they were talking about AI workforce management in the way of saying like we used to have, well, not used to, we still have like human resources departments, but some companies are now making their human resources like more like workforce resources, where it's not only management of humans, but also management of like AI as well incorporated in that. So I was wondering if you're seeing some of that movement from where you sit.
Yeah, man, I think that you're gonna see it. You're gonna see what a lot of the largest companies in the world are doing, which is they are turning their learning and development functions within human resources into upskilling so that they can start to upskill their current employees to help them understand what's appropriate to use AI for, what's not appropriate to use AI for, what types of things you can include and push into the large language models, what's off limits. They're also thinking about how can their learning and development teams help them un help them and then their employees understand what's off limits for third party AI tools and how to block certain third party AI tools. But at the end of the day, you're going to see more and more companies and corporations look at human resources departments as how we can train people to race with the machine and not rage against it.
Yeah, I've been giving a lot of thought to that as well. Like, just in my own personal life, because I use ChatGPT a lot lately in my personal life. My wife, as we were talking about, how black women tend to have tended to be adopters of these things even faster than black men. She uses it extensively at this point. But I've started using it as well. And so I've given a lot of thought to, in particular, like, so do you have an idea of some AI do's and don'ts? Because I have some for myself, but like, do you have an idea of AI do's and don'ts, or is that something that would be in a course that LinkedIn offers or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely some AI literacy courses that are available at opportunity.linkedin.com that'll tell you a little bit about how to think about these tools, how to use them, what to be careful of. I would say I would be careful of putting any proprietary information into third party outside AI tools. Like if you are if you're using Microsoft Copilot in your at your company, right? You might not want to put some of your internal documents into external AI tools like a ChatGPT, right? I would say be really careful about uploading anything into any third party AI tool that you don't want to become a part of the large language model that it's going to use to figure the other things out. So anything that's proprietary information or proprietary data to what your work product is, I think you got to be really careful about that. Now, if you're using AI tools internally at your company and it's company information and company documents, and your company has sort of given you the green light to be able to do that, I think that that's all well and good, right? But being able to understand what's in compliance and what's outside of compliance, especially as we're in this beginning phase, and what I kind of feel like for those of us who've been playing with these tools for a long time is the messy middle. I think it's better to use caution about what to use the tools for. At work specifically, if it's a company that pays your check every month, right? Like I think you need to be really clear about what is a red light and what's a green light for that. But I think as a casual user, being really cautious about anything that is super proprietary or that has a ton of personally identifiable information in it. I think sometimes we're so fascinated with what AI can do that we may get a little too excited and say, "Oh, I'm gonna put this whole document with all of my personal information in it into this tool and see what it pops out," right? I think you got to be really careful about stuff like that.
I definitely agree with that. Just switching over to you were talking about, federal workers starting to hit the private sector. Are you actually seeing those trends from Fed starting to hit the private sector, or is it more of just an anecdotal feel you have about that?
No, man, listen, we have had we've had like a couple of 100,000 federal workers who have lost their roles and had their roles eliminated. And they're not, there's no evidence that the public sector is going to be able to absorb all those roles. They're absolutely coming into the private sector to look for work. There's no way that if I lost my job at the CDC, that I wouldn't start to look at healthcare companies and healthcare organizations in the private sector for jobs. So that ain't anecdotal. That's just a matter of fact. When you've got a couple of 100,000. Like, I think that we sort of that because the headlines are so crazy that sometimes we lose sight of the fact that we're talking about 300,000 US federal employees having had their roles eliminated. Those people are not just going to other federal agencies, particularly if they just got fired from them. They're going to be looking in the private sector. And we still don't know yet if the private sector is going to be able to absorb all those roles.
And interestingly, as we're having this conversation, there's an article that came out on NPR talking about the impact that that might have on the black middle class. Do you have any ideas about that? Because I don't know if a lot of people know, but there's a high number of people of black people who work in the federal government who are being impacted by these job movements, and so. I don't know. I was just going to ask the open question, like, do you have any idea about that, or are you seeing any of that, in terms of disproportionately impacting, black people?
Listen, it's no question that anything that impacts federal worker employment is going to impact Black folks. African Americans make up roughly 14% of the U.S. population. We make up just over 20% of all federal workers. So if you've got that level of job displacement in the from the federal government, you're going to have a disproportionate job placement of African Americans. And listen, let's not be obtuse about it. Many of us have heard from grandparents, parents, other people talk about a good government job. There's so much black wealth and black financial security, generational financial security, if not generational wealth, has been built on black folks in good government jobs, pensions that took care of making sure that younger generations didn't have to take care of their parents or their grandparents because those parents or grandparents had pensions. Oftentimes, those quote unquote good government jobs had benefits that help those that next generation of folks actually pay for college and university degrees, all of those things, or those good quote unquote government jobs had that level of stability that made home ownership much easier for those African Americans who had those jobs than maybe African Americans who didn't have them. So absolutely, a shift in federal employment is going to be a shift in African American employment and unemployment. And African American employment and unemployment is a major shift to our community health and stability.
Being this Black Man Sunday, so we talked about, how black women use LinkedIn a lot more than black men do. And I gotta admit, even like in my personal life, like my wife really uses like LinkedIn like a lot. I don't. I get on there and I'm like, all right, I got a couple of messages. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm kind of just kind of scrolling. So I'm like, I just want to know, do you have any suggestions on how we can increase the usage of black men? I know that, it is an incredible tool for networking. Can you give us some comments about how networking has changed? Is this also something that black men are falling behind on? How can we start building that networking community, and how can we as black men or how can black men also increase their usage of LinkedIn?
Yeah, man, I think that part of it is you got to get on there and you got to figure out what you want to, what is important to you as a professional, and how you want to talk about that, how you want to show up. I also think it's like one of those things that I think that black women are constantly learning. That's not to say that we're not. I think that it's more visible to me that black women are constantly trying to like connect more and learn more and say, I'm gonna upskill, or oh shoot, I didn't know that. And this person knows a lot about something I don't know about. Let me follow her or link to her, or let me follow him or link to him. And I think that women are much more likely to do that sometimes. I think that women oftentimes don't think of making a connection on a platform about professionalism. They don't think of it as being a favor or being and something that's extra or out of the norm. And I think that a lot of times we may not network as easily or as casually as black women do. And they get a lot of benefit from that because they get the opportunity to say, hey, she might not be my bestie, or she might not be somebody I know really well, but if in 2 years I am thinking about joining the company or getting a job, or I'm looking to get a job at the company that she or he works for, I wouldn't have any problem saying, hey, I'm thinking about a job at the company where you work. Can we just have a quick conversation, maybe offline, so that I can get a better idea if this is a cool place for somebody like me, right? I think that it's a mindset shift of, I think women are oftentimes socialized and educated on the fact that your networks are going to be superpowers for you in finding economic opportunities. And I think that we've done a disservice to men and to younger guys by not telling them, yo, your network is valuable. It's money to you. It's real money. It's real opportunity. It's visibility. It's access. It's somebody that'll tell you the real deal before you get into a situation where you have to experience that real deal. Like, I think that we haven't talked to men enough about the power of networks or how to use networks the way that we have sort of drilled it into our conversations with women and girls. we've done more with telling women and girls that you're going to need to network. You're going to need to have a community around you. I feel like we kind of tell dead dudes like, ah, you're going to figure it out. You're going to make your way. But that's the wrong way to do it. Everybody else is like making connections to do it. Our white counterparts are making connections to do it. They're getting networking connections from their uncles, their dad, their grandparents, their people that they went to school with, their fraternity brothers. They may not even go into college, but people that they were in their neighborhoods. And I think that we got to do the same thing with us as Black men, that there's a lesson for us to learn from our sisters, which I feel like there's so many lessons for us to learn from sisters all the time. But part of that is connecting with each other, sharing information with each other, but not just information on, oh, here's how you get a bag, but here's what you should know about this place so that you protect yourself if you're in that situation that may look good, but it might not be, right? There's so much more that we can go further when we kind of in a space where we can share information with each other.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate, man. I appreciate all the information you've given us and spending some time with us today, man. It's been, like, for me, it's been really educational, man. It's making me look at some things differently. So definitely appreciate that, man.
Hey, I appreciate, man. I always appreciate coming on, man. I appreciate that. It's been great talking to everybody today. Yo, Corey, man, thank you so much for having me on, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's what we do, man. It's Black Man Sundays, man. You enjoying yourself on the show, man?
Hey, always. I appreciate it, man. This has been a great way to spend my Sunday afternoon. So the only thing that I was looking forward to more than this is the food that's in the kitchen waiting on me right now. So that is it. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I've been
man.
Looking forward to it all week.
Definitely, man. We appreciate you, man. Appreciate you coming back. Because I think the last time you came on the show, you was like, man, it would be great if y'all invite me back. So you came back, man. You know, man, you Black Men Sunday alumni. Now it's time to go and get you some merchandise and get hooked up. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, I got to go on the site and get some.
There we go, man. That's right. So Andrew McCaskill, man, thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays. And you heard it here. LinkedIn expert. His checks on the first and 15 say LinkedIn. If you don't believe me, ask Drew. Hit Drew up and you can check him out, The Black Guy in Marketing, because I always check him out on LinkedIn, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate your time coming on the show, brother. Many blessings and peace.
Hey, peace, brother. Peace, brother. Peace to everybody. It's a Black Man Sunday.